Oh, it's 8 o'clock. Good morning. Welcome to the May 12th National Online Forum of the Aerospace and Defense Forum. This morning's topic is increasing cash flows during COVID-19. Well, I'll be interested to hear how we do that. I'm Ivan Rosenberg, the co-founder and executive director of the Aerospace and Defense Forum, and a managing partner of the management consulting firm Invista Associates. The Aerospace and Defense Forum goal is to provide a way for those of us that are in and supporting the aerospace and the defense industry by communicating information, ideas, collaborating on projects, and developing business with each other. There are 9 chapters. We just added the Ventura County chapter that, in the absence of a global pandemic, usually meet in person monthly. In addition, there's a monthly newsletter, over 250 recordings of chapter presentations that goes back 10 or 11 years, and tours of A&D sites that the public doesn't normally get to. To continue fulfilling our purpose, we're conducting about 3 webinars a month until in-person meetings can be resumed, which we hope may actually happen this year. More may be found at the website aerospacedefenseforum.org. Your video camera should be off. Your audio should be off, and please leave it off. You'll see little icons in the lower left, and it looks like everybody's done that. And if somehow your video shows up, and because we don't want it on the recording, I'll turn it off. If you have a question anytime during the presentation, you can enter it through the chat. You'll see a little chat box in the bottom of your screen or the chat icon. Click on that, and there'll be a field. And that will allow you to enter your questions. We will handle all the chat questions at the end. So this morning, Craig Lemon, tax senior manager, Larry Schultz, partner, and Peter Henderson, partner, all of Moss Adams, will discuss how A&D companies can increase cash flows by taking advantage of the many credits and incentives available to them. When this thing all started, that was the number one thing. How do you manage your cash flow? And I suspect it's still an issue. Their discussion will include both long-standing incentives, such as the R&D tax credit, cost segregation studies, and the work opportunity tax credit, and new incentives stemming from the COVID-19 rescue bills, such as the employee retention tax credit and the aviation manufacturing payroll support program. Those of you who are members will get copies of the slides. By the way, the webinar is being recorded, as our webinars are, and the recordings and the slides will be available for download by A&D Forum members, and everybody will get a email. So a quick introduction to our 3 presenters, because we want to spend most of the time on the information. Craig has practiced public accounting since 2001, specializing in state and local tax. He provides advisory income franchise tax services to clients in a variety of industries, including technology, manufacturing, and telecommunications, and media clients. Craig consults with clients on statutory and discretionary credits and incentives related to economic development activity, such as job creation and retention, capital investment, and employee training. Larry has practiced public accounting since 1992. He has experience directing all phases of audits, including control testing, field work, and report preparation for a variety of clients. Larry works primarily with aerospace and consumer-based companies, including those with manufacturing and distribution operations, as well as hospitality organization. Peter has worked in public accounting since 2008. He specializes in federal and state R&D tax credit incentives. Peter has extensive experience in mechanical and high-tech industry, including aerospace, defense, space tech, automotive, manufacturing, and hardware and software development. Prior to joining Moss Adams, Peter spent several years performing R&D tax credit studies at a Big 4 firm. I should also say that Moss Adams has been one of the primary supporters of the A&D Forum for a long, 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 long time in many, many ways, including being the host of the Orange County chapter for 4 or 5 years. And Peter, for example, has been on the Orange County chapter steering committee, which is really runs each chapter. So, Larry, would you take a few moments and just say a few words about Moss Adams?
Sure. Thank you, Ivan. And yeah, and thank you very much for the support of the A&D Forum. And Moss Adams has been a proud supporter for many years. And in fact, I believe we're sponsors of 5 of the organizations in California and Texas. So thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. Moss Adams is a full-service accounting and advisory firm ranging from audit and tax to transactional service consulting, which includes quality of earnings and also M&A tax structuring on both sell side and buy side transactions. We have over 35 offices, 3,500 employees, and close to $1 billion in revenues. In a drill down into our A&D space, we have over 275 A&D companies, ranging from MROs to hardware shops, software shops, job shops, so full service on that. And again, I want to say thank you for everybody for joining the call today, and thank you for Ivan and Peter and Craig as well. So back to you, Ivan.
Great, thank you. All right. Thank you, Larry. So here's a here's a overview of the agenda today. So quick overview and then some on the federal incentives and state incentives, and then we'll end off with a Q&A. So, Peter, you get the first question. What's the biggest challenge you are seeing A&D clients have to overcome when claiming industry-specific incentives? All yours.
All right. Well, thank you, Ivan. I'd say the biggest challenge is simply just awareness of all the incentives that are out there. You know, we see companies taking advantage of, you know, maybe an incentive here or there, but it's pretty rare that we see a company take a holistic approach to incentives and evaluate, you know, what is everything that's on the table that our company could go after. And it's when companies do that that you really see hugely significant benefits in terms of cash flows and by taking advantage of all the incentives that are available. So,
you want the next slide?
Yeah, let's go to the next slide. Yep, we'll get it kicked off. All right, so as Ivan mentioned, the purpose of this presentation is to provide a comprehensive overview of the incentives, credits and incentives available to A&D companies. And it's going to include both the, you know, the longstanding pre-COVID incentives, you know, the R&D credits, the cost segregation, et cetera, as well as new incentives, relatively new incentives that came about through the COVID stimulus bills. And just for, you know, for terminology purposes, the two main COVID stimulus bills were the CARES Act. I won't read that one out, but that was signed into law in March of 2020. That was really the big one. And then the American Rescue Plan Act, which was signed into law just a few months ago. And then various state bills that contain provisions that Craig will talk about. All right, next slide, Ivan. And you can skip. So we're going to start off with the federal incentives, and you can hop to the next one, Ivan. Okay, so this first one is a very aerospace-targeted incentive. It's known as the Air Transportation Payroll Support Program. Originally passed as part of that first act, the CARES Act, but then it was extended and modified in the ARPA Act. There's kind of two primary parts to this incentive. The $15 billion was allocated, or a lot of money was allocated to air carriers and supporting functions, so caterers, ground support crew. We're not going to talk about that one just because there's not a lot of air carriers per se that are part of the forum. The more relevant one is this second bullet here, which is $3 billion that has been allocated to aviation manufacturing companies. Now, this includes both MROs and component manufacturers, so, you know, any company that is manufacturing flyaway parts. And the idea of this incentive is that it is intended to facilitate retention and rehire of employees. So there's two criteria that need to be met for a company to qualify this. One of two has to be met. First one is that the company has had to have laid off or furloughed at least 10% of its workforce in 2020 over 2019, which, you know, was not uncommon by any means. The second criteria, and you can, you know, as long as you meet one of these, you qualify, is that the company experienced a 15% decline in revenues from 2020 over 2019. So, you know, from what we've seen in the aerospace sector is that, you know, quite a few companies are going to meet, you know, one of those two criteria. Now, this incentive can be a very high dollar incentive. Effectively, what it would do is cover up to 25% of the company's payroll for a year. Now, it's $3 billion, which, you know, is not a lot of money when you're talking about an industry of this size. So it's going to be very competitive. And, you know, the companies that are really aggressive in going after this and are on top of things are the ones that, you know, are more likely to secure those funds. It's administered by the Department of Transportation. It's a pretty unique process. The application process is not yet open. It's likely to be open soon, although they haven't set a date. But if this is something that, you know, your company is, you know, could qualify for, it's definitely something you want to look into now. There's some steps you can take now to start the process, some registration steps. But, you know, could be very significant. 25% of a company's payroll, can be a lot of money. So that's a big one. Next up, Ivan, you can go to the next slide. So, we're transitioning now to just a very long-standing, incentive. And research tax credit. We believe this is one of the most lucrative incentives out there available to A&D companies. It's a federal incentive, but most states that have income taxes also offer a state R&D credit. So California, Arizona, Idaho, Utah, Texas, those are the ones on the west, western states that offer state credits. Expense-driven credit. And the key with this one is that the definition of R&D is a lot more expansive than most people often assume. So more qualifies than people think generally. Another key here is it's not just limited to IRAD. When, you know, in the aerospace industry, a lot of people think of R&D as just IRAD. But work under contract can and often does qualify. And, you know, as you know, the majority of activities in the aerospace industry are performed under contract. The majority of credits that are claimed are really for work done under contract. What makes this credit so beneficial is that companies can take it year after year. And, you know, all of our clients that we claim this for take it year after year, and it's a really significant tax reduction strategy, long-term tax reduction strategy. Fairly strict documentation requirements, just because it is such a high dollar credit, it can get pulled for audit, and the auditors have pretty high expectations of support and what they want to see to back up the credits that you're claiming. And then one subset of this incentive is what's called the R&D payroll credit. And what this incentive is really applicable and really significant for space tech companies, any kind of technology startup in the aerospace and defense sector. What this incentive does is if a company meets two criteria, they can elect to use the credit to offset payroll taxes opposed to income taxes. And the idea there is, you know, a company that startups often aren't taxable, and especially space tech companies, is they're not going to have tax offset. So if they meet these two criteria, they can use it to offset payroll taxes. Any company that has employees is going to be incurring payroll taxes. And the two criteria there are that the company has to have less than $5 million in revenue in the current year, and they could not have had revenue prior to 5 years ago. So if they meet those criteria, they can elect to offset up to $250,000 per year to offset payroll taxes. And we've been doing a lot of those credits, and they're hugely beneficial. All right, Ivan, you can go to the next one. Okay, so this is another longstanding tax reduction strategy. It's not necessarily an incentive. It's not anything that's written in the tax code. But the idea with cost segregation is that you're accelerating depreciation by breaking components out of real property into shorter depreciation lives. And so any company that owns a building, generally the building and all the fixtures and components associated with that building are going to be subject to a very long depreciable life. So 39 years is very common. And so you can't recoup the cost of that building or deduct them, and fully deduct that building until that 39 years is up. The idea with cost segregation is what you're doing is you're breaking out all of those subcomponents of the building, you know, the fixtures, the any kind of machinery that is fixed to the building, and you're breaking that out and you're depreciating it over much shorter lives, so 5 years, 7 years, and as a result, you're accelerating that depreciation, and you're taking a lot more depreciation in the earlier years, which reduces your current tax liability. And the idea here is it's the time value of money. By accelerating those depreciations, you're taking that depreciation earlier and saving money earlier. So that's cost segregation, and this is a big one. This can be really beneficial. Can save companies a lot of money. So next one, Ivan. Okay, so this slide here just covers various tax law changes that came about as the CARES Act, which was the first bill that was passed last year. Now, the one that I want to point you to here is the first one there, which is the net operating loss carrybacks permitted for losses generated in 2018, 2019, and 2020. The rule here that was changed is that for losses incurred in these years, you can now carry those back 5 years. You previously couldn't carry them back that long. It was previously just a one-year carryback. And what this allows companies to do is take losses and carry them back to years where the aerospace industry was doing very well and a lot of companies were profitable. But also the second thing here is that the tax law changed in 2008. And so we had a lot higher tax rates prior to 2008. Went from 35% to 21%. And so by being able to carry that those current losses back to a year where tax rates were significantly higher means that you can effectively get much, much more sizable refunds. So this is kind of key to a lot of this, these incentives is the ability to carry these the losses back. So these incentives can generate losses, which you can then carry back and get refunds for earlier year taxes that you paid. All right, you can go to the next one, Ivan. These are just a few more additional federal tax strategies. The main one here is accounting methods for inventory. I won't go into the details on this, but aerospace parts are inherently expensive. A lot of companies have a lot of high dollar inventory, and there's a number of tools that are available to really treat that inventory in the most beneficial way to maximize your tax deductions, whether it's last in, first out, first in, first out, or some of the rules related to supplies and rotable parts, which is very relevant to aerospace. But there's a lot that can be done with inventory to accelerate depreciation and to treat your cost of goods sold as favorable as possible. So with that said, I'm going to pass it over to Craig.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Peter. Ivan, if we could move on to the next slide, please. Great. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to you about some federal incentives in addition to what Peter's also discussed, and then walk you through some of the states that have pretty beneficial incentives for aerospace and defense. One of the big pieces that's come out of the CARES Act and the subsequent legislation that we've seen has been the employee retention credit. The good news is the benefits have been, for this program have been extended all the way through December 31st of 2021. The benefits that are available for companies in 2021 are significantly greater than what was available in 2020. Unfortunately, not all of those benefits are extended back, but there are some important distinctions between what's available in 21 and what's available in 20. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. I think one of the key pieces to take into consideration is when the legislation was initially drafted, you had a choice. You could either get a PPP loan or you could take the ERTC. Many clients opted for the PPP and thought they were foreclosed from the ERTC. Based on changes to the legislation, you now can take both a PPP loan out and also benefit from the ERTC. And lastly, a critical piece of this legislation was that for businesses that weren't in existence in 2019, there's now an opportunity to take the ERTC credit under some of the law changes. Next slide, please. So what this slide does is it sort of lays out the qualifications and some of the bright line tests between the ERTC as it existed for 2020 and how we're going to be taking it in 21. The key thing is you need to be able to demonstrate for qualification purposes, regardless of which year you're in, that you were either subject to a partial or full government shutdown, or in 20, you can demonstrate a quarter-to-quarter comparison back to 2019 of a reduction of gross receipts that are 50% or greater. One of the enhancements for 21 is you take a quarter in 21, compare it back to 2019, and you only have to demonstrate a 20% reduction in gross receipts. Now, how the credit is calculated also changes depending upon if you're looking at 20 or you're looking at 21. And the key distinction is the number of employees that you had as full-time employees back in 2019. If in 2019 you had 100 or fewer employees, you can take the credit on up to $10,000 of wages and medical expenses. Whereas if you're over 100, you're only able to take the credit on wages and medical expenses paid to employees who are not currently providing services. You look at that from 20, and then you compare it to what happens in 21. That same set of facts, but the bright line test of 100 employees jumps all the way to 500. So all of a sudden, a large number of businesses that might have had 150 or somewhere under 500 all of a sudden qualify for a significantly broader opportunity to calculate this credit. And lastly, I think that this is where when we look at this benefit, you can really start to see the real value and the difference between the 20 credit and the 21 credit. The max credit you could ever generate for a single employee in 2020 was $5,000, whereas in 21, you can generate a credit of up to $7,000 per employee per qualifying quarter. So theoretically, if you qualify for all four quarters of 21, it's a $28,000 credit. The way this gets monetized it really is in one of two ways. Either you can take it as a credit against your future payroll withholding taxes, and you can do that immediately, or alternatively, we've had clients that will request a check back from the IRS for the total amount of their credit. There are advantages and disadvantages to both, and depending upon your situation, you may want to consider one or the other. Next slide, please. So, WOTC, an oldie but a goodie. This has been one that year over year we've watched. It's an employment credit that depending upon the type of employees that you're hiring, you may benefit from it based off of a different amount. So on the low end of this credit, you may have a credit amount of $2,400 and perhaps all the way on the high end, if you're able to hire in a veteran targeted group, which is a group which has a lot of commonality with aerospace and defense clients based off of their experience in the military. You might be able to obtain a credit all the way up to $9,600. This is non-refundable, but it is a dollar-for-dollar reduction against your federal income tax. I don't think we need to go through all the different categories, but you can see when you receive the presentation, different categories of individuals have a different credit amount assigned to them. If we can move on to the next slide, please. So this is really where the challenge for this credit is. This is not a retroactive credit. It's only a prospective credit, and the documentation for this needs to be done within 28 days of hire. Most companies that are involved in this credit have this as part of their automated onboarding systems. An employee fills out information, an application is created. It then goes to a state WOTC coordinator who certifies and validates this employee is being eligible for the credit. One of the things that was great about the legislation that was just passed is for years, many of us that have been involved in this credit have seen 1 year at a time extensions, but this credit has finally been extended through 2025. One of the things, though, that we've been answering client questions on this is, given some of the furloughs and some of the reductions in headcount that occurred, would those employees be eligible for WOTC as they're being rehired into 21? And unfortunately, based off of the changes to the legislation, we're furloughed employees and rehired employees still remain ineligible. But for employees that are hired otherwise and are considered new, this is an opportunity that's worth considering. It just requires planning and making sure everything is aligned in advance of hiring the employee as just part of your onboarding process. If we could move on to the next slide, please. So what we're going to talk about now are a number of state programs that are specific to aerospace and to defense. Arizona has a program that dates all the way back to the 90s when Congress was going through the BRAC committee, which was the base realignment and closure. Arizona wanted to make sure that communities were impacted by that had some assistance from the state. And so the state came up with a plan whereby they developed a military reuse zone contractors exemption. And the idea was that for contractors that were going to operate within these zones, they would receive certain benefits. Right now, we're looking at two locations in Arizona, the Williams Gateway Airport and the Phoenix Goodyear Airport. In order to receive this benefit, though, you need to have an application be accepted by the Arizona Commerce Authority. Unlike a lot of other programs, they will take these applications year-round, which is great. And the other thing is you need a letter of qualification from the Arizona Department of Revenue prior to work beginning. And if I could just take a sidebar on this and incentives generally, because we're going to talk about a number of other states and a number of other programs, it's a critical part of the incentive negotiation process to make sure that you've received approvals either from departments of revenue or economic development groups or whatever the administrating agency is prior to doing things like breaking ground, signing a lease, making a public statement that we're going to move X number of employees to Y number of locations. Once that happens for a number of these programs, there may be a but-for clause for the program. And once you take that extra step that I just described, that but-for is in many ways invalidated, and the ability to negotiate these deals becomes, if not impossible, significantly more difficult because you've indicated we're going to move there. We're going to do this already, and therefore the state doesn't necessarily have the willingness or the legal authority to engage with you to provide that incentive. And likewise, this incentive, like many of the other incentives that we'll talk about today, has an annual reporting requirement. So documenting what you're doing and where you're doing it, how you're doing it is critically important so that the incentive is not clawed back. If we could please move on to the next slide. Okay, so let's get down to it. What is the benefit of all of this? So there are really two opportunities here. One is, you can receive an exemption on the transaction privilege tax for construction contracts that are performed within the zone. So the good part of this is it applies to state and county taxes. Cities impose their own taxes, which you will not receive an exemption for, but the idea is you're at least able to receive this benefit on the state and county side. Again, important that you've got that letter of qualification for the Arizona DOR, and you want to make sure that on an annual basis you're submitting a report back to the ACA to maintain your eligibility. The other part of this benefit that is really good, and one of the things that I think is an important piece of a lot of these incentives, they may not necessarily be income tax focused. They're focused on things such as property tax or sales and use tax. So regardless of how you are from the income tax perspective, the property tax man is going to be showing up. And what you're able to do in this particular spot is companies that are able to apply and receive this can get their property reclassified. The benefit is it's both real and personal property, and you can go from a class one property type, which is assessed at 18%, to a class six, which is assessed at 5%. Now, this will last for 5 years, and when you pencil out the math on it, it can be a savings up to 72.2% over that time period. At the end of this, the property reverts back to the standard assessment ratio, but at least for those first 5 years, you're able to receive that benefit. The other thing to consider is you do this for your first set of buildings and your property that you put into the location, but then down the road, you make improvements. You can go back and you can get a separate reclassification for those improvements so you can keep that five-year clock running. So this is potentially a very lucrative incentive. Next slide, please. California. California has a deal closing program that is administered by a state agency called GoBiz. And they haven't come out with what their 21-22 fiscal allocation will be, but I can speak to what happened in 20 to 21. In total, they had $231 million that they doled out. There were three application rounds. We would expect to see similar application rounds and timing for the coming July, January, and March timeframe. This is an incredibly discretionary and competitive project-based application. I think it's important, and I may not be able to overstate just how much California likes aerospace. A couple examples of recent awards. Relativity Space received a credit in the last round, so this would have been in April, of $30 million. To put some perspective on what they committed to over 5 years, they committed to creating 964 jobs and investing $319 million. Likewise, Lockheed has received two awards, one in 2019 and one in 2018. Each award was worth $39.5 million. So that's $80 million that they've received. In essence, they agreed to creating about 1,000 jobs and investing about $300 million between those two projects. Lastly, Northrop received an award of $30 million. They're going to invest about $1 billion and hire approximately 1,000 new employees. For smaller companies, though, there was an award to Rocket Lab of $5 million with they committed to 147 employees and to spending $25 million. So this is an incentive that is incredibly important for aerospace in California. The thing that I would note about this is the state has become very focused on being able to demonstrate viable out-of-state competition. That means that you want to make sure that you can point to another state where you've entered into some type of negotiation and can document that negotiation to say, but for the CalCompetes incentive, which has taken over 5 years, we would choose to locate our operations to state X, or we've already begun negotiations. So that's just an important development that we've seen with that program. Next slide, please. So California Training Grants, this is another big one. This is an award that are generally granted in two-year contracts. It's prospective, so this is for training that is yet to come. You have to put together a project plan that shows what your different expenses will be. In turn, California will provide a cash grant for eligible training. And as you can see from the slide, you know, it varies from $9 an hour up to $23 an hour, depending upon the type of training and where it's being conducted. These awards can be very lucrative for companies such as the ones that are in the aerospace industry and defense because of the constantly changing technology. So it's something to consider as you move forward and you have additional training needs for your California-based employees. Next slide, please. So Texas has also got some really great programs. The Texas Enterprise Fund is also considered by the state of Texas to be their deal closing fund. Again, this is discretionary. It's competitive. You need to put an application together. The key aspect of this is a successful awardee could receive a benefit of anywhere between $1,000 to $10,000 per new hire that's placed in Texas. Again, you're dealing with companies that are investing, you know, anywhere from 10 to hundreds of millions of dollars in necessarily hiring also large numbers of employees, but there's a balance between that in Texas. So a project with a lot of investment may not necessarily have to have as much employment. A project with a lot of employment may not have to have as much investment. The Texas Enterprise Zone program is also another highly competitive program, but this benefit is based off of your sales and use tax expense at the location that you're qualifying. It requires a local nomination. Jurisdictions, depending upon their size, may either have three or six nominations that they can do in an annual period of time. There is a rigid set of deadlines for this that they're due quarterly. This one is a little more formulaic compared to some of the other programs we've discussed, where they're really looking for increases in headcount. And based off of that, the value of the sales and use tax refund that you can receive will increase based off of that. It's important to note you have to pay the sales tax up front, and then you apply for a refund once you receive a certain dollar amount of sales and use tax expense. So you want to be able to monitor this and also keep an eye on where your expenses are going. Next slide, please. The two benefits that are discussed here are Chapter 380, 381, and 312 and 313. They're both property tax benefits. The difference is under 380 and 381, it's awarded by a Texas municipality and a county, and it's a property tax abatement. So you have to pay the property tax in first, and then you receive it back. Whereas Chapter 313 and 312, is a limitation of your property tax bill, and that's over a 10-year period. So whatever that limit is, you hit it, you don't pay it in, you have that automatic savings. The difference is this is awarded by a school district and by local governments. I'd note, sitting in Texas, the school districts do levy the larger property tax amounts. You obviously want to do some analysis on both. Very rarely are both awarded. It's generally a one or the other scenario. So it requires a little focus and a little attention to detail on which program makes the most sense. I would note before we move on to the next slide that there was one thing that I did not include on the Texas slides, but it's very specific to aerospace. The reason it wasn't included is I was waiting for an update from the state of Texas, and I was able to speak with them yesterday about this. And this is the Texas Spaceport Trust Fund. And that had been it's a grant that had been funded previously, and I wanted to understand better if the legislature was likely to fund it or not. As it turns out, after having a chance to speak with my contacts in the state of Texas, this is a program that looks like it may receive approximately $15 million worth of funding at the end of this legislative session, which would mean applications would become available in September, October of this year. And the goal of this is it's a financial tool to support infrastructure for viable businesses that launch and are able to land a reusable vehicle or spacecraft that are going to locate infrastructure in the state of Texas to allow for that to happen. So I think that this is a key program that we want to keep our eyes on. It's changing. When I spoke with the state, they do believe it will be funded, but like everything else, until we reach the end of the legislative session, it is a question mark. So more to come on that, hopefully. Next slide, please. So Washington State, you know, perhaps no state has more incentives that are focused on aerospace than Washington. And the first one we're going to talk about is an exemption for aerospace manufacturers for computer hardware, software, and peripherals. I would note, just for purposes of not having me to listen to me repeat the same four groups all over again, I would say we've got manufacturers in process for hire of commercial airplanes, non-manufacturers engaged in aerospace product development, certified repair stations, based off of FAA regulations, and aerospace tooling manufacturers. I'll just refer to those as the key four qualifying types of businesses for the rest of these slides, where it's all four groups. What's great about this is it's a 100% sales and use tax exemption based on the purchase of computer hardware, software, peripherals, and when you capitalize the labor in and you charge sales and use tax to the installation of that equipment that's used in the development, design, engineering of aerospace products or in providing aerospace services. I would note you probably want to make sure you have obtained the exemption certificate from the Department of Revenue so that as you're making these purchases and receiving the exemption, you can provide that and also document it for your own purposes. Next slide, please. All right, so the commercial airplane manufacturing facility exemption. This is available to manufacturers of commercial airplanes, fuselages, and wings. What's key to note about this one, however, is if you're going to be doing it in a port district, obviously there's going to be a political subdivision involved in this and a municipal corporation where you're leasing these facilities. You want to make sure that you've reached out to them and you have an agreement in place so that when you do your construction of the buildings that allow for you to do the manufacture of the airplanes, the fuselages, and the commercial airplane wings, that you can receive the exemption on the sales and use tax that would otherwise be charged for that. Ian, next slide, please. Is similar for airplane maintenance facilities. This is eligible for a repair operator engaged in the maintenance of airplanes. Again, you want to reach out to that political jurisdiction that you're leasing the property from, make sure that you have an agreement in place so that as you're building the buildings or the additions to the buildings, you're able to say, hey, here's my sales and use tax exemption. I don't have to pay any of it on the buildings because I'm going to be doing the qualified activities of, you know, building the commercial airplanes, fuselages, and the commercial airplane wings. Next slide, please. Okay, so this is a big one. This is the B&O credit for property tax, leasehold taxes paid on aerospace business facilities. Again, this is going to go back to our four key groups that qualify for this. And the activities, depending upon who you are, you have different qualifying activities. If you're a manufacturer and you're a processor for hire, you want to take a look at your payment on your property tax leases for new buildings. You want to take a look at buildings where you increase the value through renovation. And then the key component here is that those same buildings are used for manufacturing of the airplanes or components or working on tooling that's specifically designed in the manufacturing of commercial airplanes or components of those airplanes. And then you want to look to the payment of the property tax equipment that's based on the being eligible for machinery and equipment exemption. Next slide, please. So again, same benefit, but you're looking to being a different type or a different qualifying portion of this. In this case, you're a qualified repair station or you're an aerospace non-manufacturer. Again, you're looking to the payment of property taxes and leasehold taxes on the new buildings and also on the increased value of anything that you've renovated. And you're also looking to the payment of property taxes on on your computer equipment and peripherals that you use in the aerospace product development. And then the way in which this benefit is calculated is you're looking to the property taxes that you paid on the new buildings, property taxes paid on the increased value of the buildings, and then property taxes paid on the M&E, which is exempt from sales and use tax. So those are the three criteria that you're going to be looking for in order to monetize this benefit. Ian, next slide, please. All right. So this is the last of our Washington-based incentives. This is the B&O credit for product development expenditures. Again, we're looking at our four key industries that we've discussed before. What you're looking to do is you're performing research, design, engineering activities to develop aerospace products or a product line. Now, probably comes as no surprise, these activities need to be performed in Washington to qualify for this credit. You want to document all of these expenses so that at the end, you're able to take a 1.5% credit on the aerospace product development. You're not able to exceed your B&O tax, however, but this is one that you just want to make sure all of your ducks in a row, you've appropriately documented. It should be no more complicated than any of the other incentives that we've discussed. And I believe that that was our last slide on Washington State. So I will throw it back to Ivan.
Okay. So let's see here. We got to move it to, here we go. So Peter, you can turn your video on. I've got to tell you guys, there's so much information in here. Obviously, no one is going to be able to accommodate it just by watching it. So I'm going to find a way to make this available to everybody, including non-members. There was just so much great stuff in here that I don't think we want to limit it to just them. So I'll figure that out. I'm not quite sure yet how to do it, but given Moss Adams permission, we'll make it available to the world because it's great stuff. So if you have a question, please put it in the chat, and I will hop in with a few of my own. Clearly, there is a lot of complexity. There are timelines. There's all kinds of stuff that one has to do just in going through the slides. Where's the low hanging fruit? If an A&D company's out there, where would you recommend they start in trying to take advantage of some of these incentives and benefits?
I can take that, Ivan. So I would encourage them to focus on ones that, you know, like their employer retention tax credit, where, you know, that's not going to be around forever. That's a time sensitive one that can be hugely beneficial to companies. We're seeing a lot of aerospace companies qualify for that one. So the time sensitive ones, including the Air Transportation Payroll Support Program, where, you know, if you're not really on top of that one, you're going to miss it, because we're confident that one's going to go quick. That's where I think the immediate focus should be. But, again, in terms of the low hanging fruit, R&D credits, if your company is manufacturing a product, even if it's not a product that you designed, that can be a really beneficial credit, that you can take advantage of year after year. If you own a building, cost segregation. That's my answer, Ivan, is, and Craig, you might have something to add to that as well.
I would echo the comment on ERTC. That is, without question, in my world, the hottest thing I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. It is something that provides an immediate benefit to companies. It is something you can take in the next quarter against your payroll taxes, and that can be a substantial savings for companies immediately and can improve cash flow the next day. I mean, it's a fantastic program. 21 really opened the floodgates for the potential benefit. I should note, I touched on that at a high level for qualification purposes. If you happen to be looking at it and you're like, we're close, but we're not there, there are some really significant nuances that the presentation didn't lend itself to that an analysis can allow us to help you qualify your business far more comprehensively than just what we're able to provide on a high-level slide.
I've got a question, and I truly don't know the answer to this, but I suspect that applying to some of these programs, I would know going in what it takes to qualify. You know, I mean, what it takes to do all the application and all that research. Are you guys available to, you know, even if I'm with a different accounting firm, that's the sensitive part of it. So I may be with accounting firm B, but boy, this sounds really interesting. How can I take advantage of you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a common situation where, you know, a company is with a smaller CPA firm that they've got a, you know, longstanding relationship with, and, you know, they're interested in kind of using us for some of these more kind of specialized services, you know, and we're happy to do that and work with their CPA. Yeah, absolutely. We do that quite frequently.
Good.
So
there's not a wall. If I'm not a client already of Moss Adams, there's not a wall I can call you. Yeah, that's a big deal because you know, I'm too busy getting my parts out. And I don't know what I don't even know who to assign in my company to go and do all this. I need somebody like you guys to walk it through, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we can do an assessment of really, you know, request some information from your company, some pretty basic information and, you know, do a comprehensive assessment of, you know, all these incentives that we talked about.
And I've got sort of a personal question. You know, I'm a management consultant. We provide lots of training. Does a company who wants to take advantage of ETP, what does it take to put that together? Do they need to go through an organization that already has, I guess, an ETP contract or something like that? What's the choices there?
No, so there's an application. You can find it online. The employee, the program has got a pretty well built out application that you can take a look at. Where we're able to offer help is based off of working on prior applications. We can provide some advice and guidance as to what the state is looking for. Again, it is competitive and those funds do tend to go quickly. So the sooner we're able to get it in to have the state look at it, the more likelihood there will be funds available. And then it really becomes a question from a prospective basis of making sure, you know, you document, you have timesheets, you've spent the time to, you know, work out your syllabus and demonstrate how the training that you said you were going to provide to your employees matches back to what was on the application. And then you just provide a report on an annual basis back to the state of California, demonstrating that so that they acknowledge that what you've committed to, you've provided back to the state.
So a company can apply for ETP directly itself. It doesn't have to go through anybody else.
That is correct, yes. Absolutely.
And those numbers that you had on your slide, are that per employee in the training? That's not...
Yeah, that's correct. No, that would not be you only get $9 for 100 employees training on a computer. No, that's correct. That's per employee.
All right. Sorry for that. Obviously, we have a somewhat of interest in that, given that we provide training. Okay. So... Here's another question. You know, what are some of the, can you discuss some of the timelines that are required to negotiate these incentives that you've discussed? Any comments on those?
Sure. So, you know, if we look at like CalCompetes, for instance, we understand that CalCompetes is going to be, generally speaking, we're going to have three different periods that we can apply for it. Getting started probably two to three months, and 3 months would be better than two. Putting that application together, because if you think about what I said, what you're also going to have to demonstrate to California is, hey, I have a viable opportunity. I could go to Arizona. I could go to Texas. I could go to Washington State. Well, you're not going to be able to put together those negotiations and document those negotiations for California purposes in a month and a half. It used to be you could simply say, hey, guys, I could take X number of employees, move them to Arizona, and the credit is worth Y number of dollars. I do the math, and that's it. That's no longer working with California. It's the next level of documentation for them. Now, I'll compare that to, say, for instance, a program like the Texas Enterprise Zone. Let's talk about one of the property tax exemptions, 313, 312, 380, 381. That's perhaps a better one. There are certain statutory amounts of time the state of Texas is allowed. They get 90 days to review the application at the comptroller's office. It doesn't matter how many Craig Lamlins there are working on your project. They're still going to get 90 days for that initial review. Then after we go through some back and forth with them, they get another 20 business days to do another review. So our typical guidance is for a property tax exemption, you're probably in the 6 to 9 month range to negotiate. So that's a key piece. I've had clients, you know, come very close to when they want to break ground, and sign a lease. And unfortunately, it's just not a sufficient amount of time to negotiate with the state of Texas. And it's not a matter of how fast or how hard we can work. The state just has statutory deadlines that we can't move around.
Good, valuable piece of information. Okay, so I'm going to give you one last one, and then we're going to end. So what's other lessons learned, you know, to survive the audit, you know, such as federal R&D or any of the state programs? You've been through this uncountable number of times. What's the concise lessons learned to A&D companies for this kind of, for the audits?
I can start on that one with the R&D credit. So I spent a lot of my time in audit defense, and the key there is having meaningful quality documentation, and to be able to put that together, you've got to have somebody that knows aerospace, that is able to comprehend, you know, the technical aspects of projects. And, you know, there's good documentation and there's not good documentation. And we've got to put our best foot forward when it comes to supporting these credits and, having really meaningful documentation and being able to identify what a manufacturing company would commonly have, whether it's, you know, traveler reports and fleshing out quality documentation to support the numbers, is what gets you through an audit.
Great, Peter. Thanks. Craig, any?
I think Peter's answer was right on the nose. I would just paraphrase something that I say. Documentation today will save you documentation tomorrow and will save your benefit from a clawback. And it's critically important.
Very good. So, guys, thank you. I got to tell you that accounting is a topic that just the word puts me to sleep. And I thought you guys did, all three of you, Craig, Peter, and Larry, unbelievable job. You were able to take something which really does put me to sleep, you know, when you start talking about all the restrictions and this and that, and you're able to make it interesting. And I know I got to be awake to go to the next slide, but I actually was there, and I just want you to know that's unique. And so thank you, the three of you. And you can now turn off your video and relax, because we're going to go through the last part. But thank you. Deeply appreciate it. So upcoming meetings. On May 19th, post-COVID aerospace market outlook by two people from Charles Edward Management Consultants. We got a lot of interest in this, what's going on. May 27th, the first meeting of the new Ventura chapter, and we got a great one to start with. So Dan Curry was the visual effects supervisor, the head of visual effects or special effects for Star Trek from the very, very beginning through all the TV shows and many of the movies for which he received great awards. Now, what's that got to do with us? Well, if you go back that far, you know, the writer said, hey, we want this to happen and spacecraft to do all this kind of stuff. They didn't have computer-generated stuff back then. He had to do it with real stuff. And it was very innovative, very out-of-the-box thinking. And I asked Dan, I said, so are there lessons learned that A&D companies could gather from that and how to be more innovative and out-of-the-box? He said, yeah. And that's where that presentation came from. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And because he's going to show stuff from Star Trek and all that stuff, but it's also should be very instructive in how do you be more innovative and out of the box. On May 28th, we've got the Arizona chapter in the evening is going to have one of the first person-to-person events, International Distributorship Pitfalls and Tips. And that's a good one, and great presenters. Mike Patterson's been involved with the A&D Forum for a while, and then Molly Ho, a very senior person with U.S. Commercial Service. So that's going to be a great presentation. June 9th, a presentation from individuals from Wells Fargo Bank, M&A Trends in the Aerospace Industry and Guidance for Small to Medium-Sized Companies and How to Be Prepared. So that's M&A is really, really active, picking up again. And so this is something, even if your company say, well, I'm not planning on doing any of that stuff now. Yeah, but it's useful to have a long runway to make sure that you're prepared and that you can sell your company for the maximum available. And then a lot of stuff coming. July 15th, a great talk. A lot of people have said the wide body is dead. It's over. It's all going to be, you know, the narrow body single aisles. Well, there's a lot of disagreement about that. The president of American Airlines said they're going to buy more wide bodies. So we went to the guy that knows, Jen Slotov, executive editor, commercial aviation at Aviation Week. This guy knows. And he's going to be talking on July 15th on the future of the wide body. September 23rd, a business health assessment, whether exiting or not. Very, very useful. Larry's been one of our most frequent speakers and very, very popular. And so how do you know whether your company's in good shape, whether or not you're exiting? Where are the blind spots that you may not have seen? Okay, so a lot, and there's more stuff that's coming. If you're interested in being a member, $350 a year. Become a member on the website. That enables you to have free attendance to all the meetings. And even equally important is access to the recordings. As I said, there's over 250 presentations, and some of them even 5-6 years ago are incredibly valuable. I want to remind you that if you're not located near one of the 9 operating chapters, membership is free. So lastly, thank you. Peter, Craig, and Larry, thank you for a great presentation. Thank you for attending. We open to suggestions for topics and speakers. And we remind you to stay safe and have a great time. And we'll see you at future webinars. Goodbye.